Hello, welcome to the Beef Cattle Health and Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. John Campbell. Before I introduce this week's guest, I want to encourage you to listen to another podcast with great information for Canadian beef producers. The Canadian Beef Cattle Podcast, also hosted by the Beef Cattle Research Council, is now live and features the most popular content from beefresearch.ca in a new audio format. Tune in every Tuesday to hear straightforward insights, expert information, and a wealth of practical knowledge on topics ranging from animal health and beef quality to grasslands management, feed efficiency, and environmental stewardship. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast streaming platforms or find weekly episodes on the BCRC podcast page at beefresearch.ca/podcasts. This week, I'm really pleased to welcome Dr. Blake Balog to the podcast. Dr. Balog's a veterinarian located in Brooks, Alberta, who's part of a large multi-site cattle practice known as Cattle Health Management. He, along with the other veterinary technician and nutritional colleagues, offer an extensive range of services tailored to cow-calf, feedlot, and dairy clients. Today, Blake's going to join me to talk about a health issue that isn't uncommon around calving season, the colicky calf. Let's get started. Here, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here. I wanted to get you for a long time, and I finally got around to doing it. So maybe before we start on our topic for today, I'll just get you to tell the audience a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for asking me to join on here. I feel like I was baited in a little bit after having just reached out for an email for something else. But so yeah, my background, I guess I'm originally from a mixed farming operation in southern Alberta. I ended up being a WCVM grad of 2012. And since graduating, I've been in the Brooks area ever since, really, and focused mostly in cow-calf practice. I'm currently an owner with Cattle Health Management. And I've actually, I guess, kind of main things that I think I should point out is that blessed to have a fantastic wife, 6-year-old daughter, and 4-year-old son here too as well. So as we were talking before here, kind of busy times with that a part of life here right now, on top of being a vet here as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And enjoy it while it lasts. My kids are grown up and I miss those times, but they are sure busy. And you're going to be a chauffeur for a while yet, Blake. That's part of the job. Yeah. But maybe we should also get you to tell us a little bit about your practice. Cattle Health, it's grown and changed the name recently, but tell us a little bit about the focus of that practice and what it involves.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's probably another part of my life that I should say that I'm blessed to be part of is the Cattle Health Management team too as well. And so we've kind of a merger of three business locations from Brooks, Lethbridge, and Tabor locations. And so currently under the hood, we've got 14 vets on our team, 5 nutritionists, most of their time spent towards feedlot for the nutrition team, and then overall about 40 staff. And something that, like I say, very blessed to have just a fantastic team of people to work with every day and that are very motivated to come to work. And it's a fun workplace and great to share knowledge across all of the people in our business.
Yeah, it's a great group of vets you have too. I know most of them and I know you've got a really great group of people and be fun to work with. So it's exciting. Well, today I brought you in and I did kind of suck you in off another email, but that's how I work these days, Blake. But we want to chat about a condition that veterinarians like yourself often get called about during or after calving season. And you and I might call it a calf with an acute abdomen. A producer might call it colic. What do we mean by that term? And what would a producer see when a calf presents with that kind of syndrome?
Yeah, absolutely. These can be pretty concerning looking critters, actually, when they do present to the producer. And so really what we're talking about with any sort of colic or acute abdomen is a critter that's got a rapid onset of abdominal pain. So it's just these animals are usually in some sort of critical status. They're really quite uncomfortable. Often they're maybe laying down and kicking at their abdomen. They may or may not have sort of a distended abdomen too as well. They might posture like they're trying to urinate or defecate. And in severe cases, and maybe in sort of respiratory distress. They're really looking like, you know, if maybe people are familiar with a colicky horse, that's kind of what we're looking at, but in a younger calf here as well. And so those are kind of the main signs that we would see sort of tipping off.
Well, there's lots of different conditions that can cause this to occur, and maybe we won't just list them right here. We'll go through them individually in a little bit and talk about some of them. Some of them are genetic and some of them are intestinal accidents and things like that. But let's say a producer notices a calf that has signs of colic. What should they do before the vet gets there to have a look at it if they're calling the vet out to have a gander at it?
Yeah, I think super important with any animal is to really just dive a little bit deeper into the critter that's laying there in front of you, or maybe hopefully standing there in front of you. And so just note a few things. You know, how old is this calf? Has there been any previous treatments recently with it? And places that I would like to usually have a producer start is especially in younger calves, is look at their navel, check their gums, skin tint, kind of how hydrated are they? Look at their eyes. Are they bloodshot, or is there anything abnormal in terms of discharge? Check for any swollen joints. Is there signs of diarrhea, any distension to their abdomen? And then is there any other sort of, you know, obvious signs of congenital defects in a really young calf? Is there something abnormal about it, how it's walking or anything else? And these can sort of be really big triggers, I guess, that will clue someone off as to, you know, what body system is abnormal. And maybe it's something that you can treat, and you already have established protocols with your vet as to what you want to do from the signs that you're going to see. So again, probably added on to that too, as well as simple parameters would be also take a temperature too as well. And so on some of these critters, they may present as having a distended abdomen. So a pretty simple thing that a producer can do on farm is pass a tube. And many of the causes that we'll discuss, passing your typical esophageal tube probably won't work really well because it's too short. It just gets into the esophagus. So we're talking about passing, you know, a longer tube, something of the, you know, quarter to 3/8 of an inch sort of size, that's actually going to get down into the stomach. But I caution you that you don't want to just pass the just said tube by itself, because that calf, they have quite sharp teeth and they can chew them off. And I have done surgery to remove said such tubes out of a calf before too. So make sure you're using some sort of, you know, tape roll or speculum so that calf can't chew on that tube and swallow it by mistake. And then some of these calves, they might require more immediate care. And so you might have to, you know, reach out to your veterinarian and their team might be able to triage you sort through some other emergency type procedures. But generally that might not be as common unless we are seeing some of the causes that we're going to discuss here a little bit later. So other things is, you know, the regular TLC things that are part of the conditions that you might see arise would be fluids and pain medications or antibiotics if there's signs of infection. But as you go through your exam, those become more obvious. And we'll discuss maybe a bit more here, I guess, as to some of the more specific things we'd see with these acute abdomen or colic type calves.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the individual reasons for this. And we'll start with maybe the youngest calf, probably just a few days old. A condition that is called Atresia coli, which is an awful fancy Latin name. What does that mean?
Yeah, so Atresia is really just the word telling us that there's a lack thereof. And coli is telling us that there's a lack of formation of some part of the intestine, if you will. There's another condition called Atresia ani, and sort of similar to that. It's a lack of formation of the anus and the calf. And of course, with that, that's, you know, the lack of formation of the anus is maybe the one that's maybe the easiest to note for the producer. And these Atresia coli ones can be a little bit trickier. And so with either of those, they usually do present a little bit, you know, not right away and early on. These calves are often born actually fairly normal. They usually have colostrum relatively normally too as well. Sometimes they will have other birth defects alongside with, but not always. And so usually we don't see them until 2 to 3 days down the road when this calf is starting to become a little bit off. Sometimes they've got a bloated abdomen, but I've seen them even be 7 to 10 days old too as well, which is surprisingly long that they can be eating and drinking for that period of time and nothing's passing through. And so if there's a lack of formation of part of the intestine or the anus, of course, they're not going to be producing any sort of fecal matter. So that's something that producers often note later on. They're like, oh yeah, they didn't pass their meconium. I didn't notice that. Or when they look on their bum, you know, there's no fecal staining or anything of that nature. And so pretty common and easy thing that we'll have producers do is just lift that tail, and lack of the anus, they're going to find that right away when they go to try to take a temperature. But even on those calves with the lack of a piece of their gut, they're going to see that those calves don't have any stool coming through. And often if they put the thermometer in, it's just this mucusy like material that's sitting in the rectum and colon. And that's pretty telltale. Like there should be some fecal material by day 2 to 3 or even day 1 really coming out on that thermometer. And so that's a big red flag as to something's abnormal there. And so what's causing that seems to be a bit of an unknown thing. There is, you know, no specific genetic predisposition, but we do anticipate it may be genetic in some breeds and some animals, but the exact inheritance pattern isn't really known. So we can't pick on any one breed in this case. And so it may just be a congenital defect due to exposure to some other aspect through the gestation period. There was touted at some point in time that early rectal palpation might have been implicated in this, more particularly in the dairy industry. That was something that was noted. Most of us, I guess, are now kind of using transrectal ultrasound, and so maybe that alleviates that. But I think even that early rectal palpation was kind of debunked, you know, quite a while ago.
Can we do anything about it in these calves, Blake? What's the possibilities there?
Yeah, good, great question. And so I think with these, you know, the sooner they're presented, the better odds of success. And I will admit that probably the Atresia ani calves, the ones that are lacking in anus, they are probably the easiest surgically because some of them are actually fairly close. That malformation is pretty close to the skin, and it may require just a minor surgery actually to connect the plumbing and create a new anus for that calf. Whereas these Atresia coli calves, it could be just about anywhere in the gut. And when I said some of these may have other congenital defects, the Atresia coli calves are more often to be the ones that might also have some other congenital defects. And they may have multiple areas in their gut that are actually missing a piece too as well. And so as you maybe can imagine, after a period of time of not being able to pass manure, the end that's closest to the mouth is going to get pretty full of fecal material and feed, whereas the end closest to the anus and the exit is pretty small. So just from a plumbing perspective, you got a great big hose to hook onto a very small hose when it comes to doing surgery. And it's not a very easy surgery at some cases. And sometimes that intestine is really quite compromised. So success rate on these Atresia coli calves is quite drastically reduced. And there are various techniques described. So if there is a genetic, you know, merit or maybe just a merit in saving that calf, then I would say there's some value in acting quite quick on these two as well to give us better success. So there's less likely chance of perforation. And I did mention that, you know, this could be potentially genetic. So I guess, you know, put that into your mind, I guess, in terms of making a decision on whether you treat or not potentially.
Right. And in my experience, be the same as yours, you know, got to get them early, and the Atresia ani are far easier to deal with than the ones that have segments of the intestine missing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's jump to intestinal accidents. So there's a bunch of those where we get twists or intussusceptions, telescoping of the intestine, as well as abomasum, the fourth stomach moving around. Let's talk about that first of all. Maybe we should talk about how a calf becomes a ruminant. They start off as pre-ruminants. So tell us a little bit about that first.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to make note of, right? Is that, you know, we're talking about these young calves presenting with a bloated abdomen. And I think that's one thing that we have to think about that's unique about this young calf is that it's not, it is a pre-ruminant at this age of its life. So when we see the abdomen distended in this case, you know, it's not like our older cattle that have probably a rumen bloat. And those rumen bloats, you know, they're usually higher on that left side. And so that's a bit different. So these young pre-ruminating calves, their main primary stomach is the abomasum, which is actually the fourth stomach, if you will, down the pipeline. And so they still do have the other three stomachs, but they're quite small. It's not until probably ages of 5 or 6 weeks of age that's starting to get a bit bigger, and they're starting to ruminate, you know, more at that period of time. And so, so really it's, we're talking about that last stomach that is the main milk digestion stomach, that is having some issues, potentially in this, in these cases here. And so in the cases of intestinal accidents, we'll maybe dial back to, looking at some intestinal based issues that can happen. And as John, you pointed out, there's some conditions called volvulus and an intussusception. And so really what we're talking about in the volvulus situation, there's some sort of twisting of the intestine upon itself. And usually that happens at the what we call the mesenteric root. And so that's a twist upon the big sling at the very top of the intestine. And it sort of, when it rotates around on itself, it can not only block off the flow of feed material, but also can block the blood flow to all of the intestines too as well. And so as you can imagine, these calves are very painful and very colicky because it's an extreme amount of pain that's going on there. And so similarly, an intussusception can also cause some pain and discomfort too as well. But as you pointed out, that's where a piece of intestine is sort of slipped inside of itself, kind of like rolling in of the sock or so. And so just if it doubles over on itself, it also can cause blockage of feed material from passing through potentially too as well. And there's no real predisposition that we know of on for these cases. Maybe intussusception might be seen a bit more in calves that have had some chronic diarrhea. But these volvulus and twists are, you know, there's no real underlying sort of issue. And with those, you know, surgical correction is something that is possible. But again, we've got to move quite swiftly on these. As pointed out, if the blood flow is obscured, then the integrity of that intestine is going to break down pretty quick. Or if it's blocked off, it doesn't take long for pieces or loops of that intestine to start to leak and lead to peritonitis or infection in the abdomen too as well. And so it can be treated quite quickly, and we can have some success on these surgically. Medical options, there really isn't much in terms of being able to do anything with these intestinal cases really at all. You can try pain medication, and one of the notes, I guess, with this type of colic is that they really don't respond well to pain medication. They'll be that painful, different than other causes of abdominal pain. So the other aspect of the that we wanted to touch on this area is the abomasum can also, as pointed out, being the bigger and largest of stomachs in the calf that's pre-ruminating here right now, it can also get in an abnormal place, or it can also become twisted upon itself. Not a super common thing. It may be a bit more common in an older animal, particularly in our dairy animals. Maybe people have heard of something called a displaced abomasum, or an LDA or RDA. So again, more common in those older critters, but can also happen in these younger calves too as well. And usually in our younger calves, that's usually paired up with some other abnormality like an ulcer or some other clostridial or bacterial overgrowth, which we'll touch on in a little bit. So again, those calves, if they've got a twist or torsion of that abomasum, they're also going to be presenting quite colicky. And main only other differentiation thing that we might see on our exam a little bit closer is that the fluid is going to be accumulating, in this case, in the abomasum, since it's not allowing material to go through. So even audibly on exam, you might even be able to physically hear the sloshing of the fluid within the abdomen of that calf. So that might be something, if you're quite keen, you might be able to hear.
Yeah, and probably those abomasal ones are a little easier to treat surgically, perhaps, if you get them soon enough, than the intestinal accidents. The intestinal accidents are pretty severe, and they get shocky pretty fast, I would think. And the abomasal ones are a little more chronic, maybe not quite so severe a colic.
Yeah, great thing to point out there too as well. Yeah, they do present quite a bit more mild and sort of are kind of just off for maybe pending days, whereas these the intestinal torsion situation, that those animals often present within a few hours, and you've got, you know, hours to sort of act on them.
Well, let's talk about a couple other abomasal problems. Let's start with ulcers. We talked about it with Dr. Jelinski in a previous episode, but maybe I'll get you to describe what happens with ulcers and what are the factors that maybe contribute to it.
Yeah, totally. I think Dr. Jelinski, of course, having taught me too as well, and recently having chatted with him on this this topic, he's describes it very well. So I encourage people to circle back and listen to that podcast episode because he describes that very well. But for kind of a quick recap, really what we're talking about is some sort of damage to the lining of the mucosa of the abomasum, that main milk digestion stomach that is that exists in this young calf. And so the damage to that mucosa or the inner lining may lead to some sort of bleeding or an ulcer in that calf, or even if it progresses a lot further, could lead to a perforation or infection within the abdomen. And as Dr. Jelinski would have pointed out, there's a, and these are his, I think, a term that I've stolen from here, him too, as well, as there's a constellation of factors that that may contribute to it. And so kind of quickly on what those could potentially be would be, you know, underlying stresses, whether that's a diet change, weather change, change in sucking frequency. And that sucking frequency could be, you know, something from just, you know, separating those calves for branding or an AI program or something else from the cow, where they're not sucking the cow for a little bit. And that may even lead into pH changes. There's some implications of hairballs, clostridial bacteria, copper and vitamin E status. Not any one of those is, you know, really well elucidated and kind of the smoking gun as a cause, but we think that they may be sort of underlying.
Right.
And some typical things that we see is that these calves present in a particular age group. So they're often kind of 3 to 8 weeks of age is our most typical age of calf that we'll see these show up in. And I guess sort of earlier clinical signs that we may see too, as well, as they may also be acting colicky, but some other things that we'll see is potentially some blood in the stool too as well. So if that ulcer is bleeding, the blood kind of leaks into that main milk digestion stomach and it gets slightly digested. And so it'll show up as black in the stool or what we can call melena. And so that can be a sign that we've got potentially an ulcer going on there.
Right. And if that ulcer gets too severe, it can eat right through and cause peritonitis and kill those calves. So sometimes we discover it at postmortem. Can we treat it if we diagnose it earlier?
Yeah, good. Great question. I think you brought up probably the most important aspect is that we probably don't see many of these present to us, you know, with these other subtle signs. Probably the most common presentation is sudden death, to be honest, and can happen in, you know, sort of rapid succession. And they can almost actually happen, as Dr. Jelinski has pointed out before, in kind of little outbreaks too, as well, sort of clustered in time too, as well, where we may see multiple of these cases. And so if we are catching these early, we're seeing these early signs and we think we're on to the fact that maybe there is an ulcer present because we have that melena, this colic signs, maybe some diarrhea, then we can consider some medical treatment. So antacids are something that can be prescribed to try to help with that, as well as a class of drugs called proton pump inhibitors. These are all kind of non-prescription, or they're prescription products, but they're not labeled for cattle, right? And so you'd have to work with your veterinarian to try to figure out a treatment regime on those. And then there is even a potential where, you know, we could do surgery on some of these cases. If it hasn't already perforated, we can oversew that surgically, that where that ulcer might be close to perforating out. But if we do have a perforation, our odds of success, you know, are drastically reduced here too as well. And then, of course, other standard treatments would be just making sure that calf stays hydrated with IV or oral fluids and trying to avoid use of things like steroids or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like Medicam, Meloxicam, that may actually kind of reduce the healing process of that ulcer.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we often reach for Meloxicam if we think a calf is painful, but this is a case where you probably don't want to do that. One other thing I see at a lot of producers when I'm going to farms sometimes is diatomaceous earth. So does diatomaceous earth help prevent this or deal with any of these issues?
Yeah, diatomaceous earth comes up pretty commonly as with a lot of different claims. And maybe we can't really debunk it on all of them, I guess. But in the case for preventing ulcers or really for treating parasites or many other things, there's no real evidence for diatomaceous earth actually benefiting or doing much of anything. And I'll maybe steal some thoughts of others that maybe the only advantage that it does provide is that it doesn't have calves licking around on dirty soil or environment, I guess, potentially. So we did suggest that maybe some of these clostridial bacteria might predispose to some of the conditions of the abomasum, but the actual diatomaceous earth, no evidence that it's doing anything of benefit. So I think if you're providing a nice creep area with supplemental feed for the calves, I would just be providing a decent quality hay, maybe a creep ration that's consisting of some sort of, you know, grain or carbohydrate or low, you know, in some other source, basically. I don't think diatomaceous earth is where I would spend lots of my dollars.
Right. Well, that leads us into another category that might cause colicky symptoms in calves, and that's abomasal bloat or abomasitis. The old name used to be Braxy for this disease, I think, from years ago, or at least that's what Dr. Jansen taught me. So tell me what that entails, what it might look like, and what causes that.
Yeah, so these calves will be quite a bit more distended often in their abdomen. And so they may present somewhat similar to our abomasal cases as well as our intestinal cases. And so it is a bit tricky to try to tease them apart. And so these calves are often quite a bit more colicky than even our abomasal torsion or twists. They come on fairly quickly. And what we've got going on is sort of a gas distension of that abomasal stomach. And so some of the same predisposing factors that might kick it off, and often sort of same age of animals too as well. And these animals, and when they often present to me, they're even a little bit more distended than many of these other presentations, and they'll even sometimes have respiratory distress. And these calves also, though, unfortunately, usually rapidly progress and may have a high mortality rate too as well. And so this is an instance where, you know, if a producer has been really diligent in their exam on farm and there's some suggestive clinical signs, there are some maybe emergency type procedures that I have described to producers to be able to try to decompress these calves on farm to be able to actually try to alleviate the pressure that abomasum is putting on that calf, as well as some oral and actually even injections of antibiotics into the abomasum. But I think I would just recommend you work directly and consult with your veterinarian for any of these types of situations. So probably, again, a good reason to reach out and triage these severe cases with your veterinarian.
Let's move on to umbilical problems or navel problems. So they don't always cause colic, but sometimes they might. So we have hernias or infections. Why might they show up as colics? First of all, let's start there. Why might we get a colicky calf because of a navel problem?
Yeah, totally. And so I guess there can be, in some senses with, say, a hernia, there could be a piece of the intestine that could be down in that hernia and that defect that could become entrapped or twist off in that location. And at some point that would cause enough pain to that calf for it to be colicky, or even maybe a really large hernia that might cause a lot of just pressure in the abdomen too as well. If more intestine and abdominal contents are pushing in, it might cause that calf to be colicky because of that. And then alternatively, infection could also cause that calf to be just really painful in this case, right? And so from the pain, infection, inflammation that's going on from the infection that's going on in that navel, whether it's abscessed or it's maybe even just got inflammation that's going up the umbilical remnants and into the abdomen, that could be causing enough sort of discomfort that calf would act colicky and maybe a little bit similar to these other cases too as well. Sometimes it's maybe not as evident that calf may have, say, infection present there, the infection could go up the umbilical cord and lead to perforation at some point and cause peritonitis that may be more subtle. And so that's where I think our initial exam of these calves can really tease out, you know, what's going on here. And so between the hernia and infection situation, I think that's where, again, where we encourage the producer to have a closer look at these animals is really important. And so with that, they're going to be able to tease apart, you know, is this a hernia or is this some sort of infection, just by your exam. And so kind of how you're going to do that is the hernia is something that is more commonly going to be often quite soft and fluctuant when you're pushing on it. And you may be able to push the intestinal contents back up into the body wall. And you'll be able to actually feel sometimes the actual ring or the hernial ring where there's actually a hole into the abdomen. If this calf, of course, has got some sort of torsion into that, it's going to be maybe stuck there, and that calf is probably going to be painful in that area. But it probably won't present the same way that the infected calf will, and that those calves with infection are often, you know, a fair bit more painful. There might be some more signs of inflammation, maybe even some drainage in that area. Often they may have a fever alongside with it. And then those calves may also have some other aspects in the exam too as well. They may have some swollen joints. They may have signs of pneumonia or previous scours that are alongside with it, that are starting to tease you into some other buckets of whether we've got a hernia versus an infection. Good. The tricky one to tease apart is the abscesses, right? That might also be a little bit soft and fluctuant compared to the similar to the hernia. And so when a producer hears an abscess, sometimes a jackknife comes out, and lancing and draining is often the treatment, but I would caution people to be careful that sometimes the infection or even abscess could lead to a hernia. And so you can have both of those two things together. And so we'd want to be very confident on our exam that we don't also have a herniation and infection or an abscess together, because that would be quite a terrible situation to lance an abscess and have intestine also present at that point.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would definitely be bad. So let's talk about hernias maybe first. What can you do as the veterinarian if you get presented with a calf with a hernia, especially if it's got additional colicky problems because something's trapped in it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so these probably would be great surgical candidates. And again, I guess if it is entrapped, it may depend on sort of the severity of how well that's or how much that sort of twisted off. But again, an emergent thing where we do want to act fairly swiftly on this, just because that intestine may become compromised. And so is a fairly routine surgical procedure where we'd be able to sort of open that up and untwist and replace the intestine. And I guess depending on the damage of that, there may be some other procedures we'd have to do, but it does hold a fairly reasonable prognosis if we catch them early enough. And so this is where, you know, better yet, if you notice that hernia beforehand, better we can do surgery on it preemptively and actually just correct that. And so if you are seeing navel swelling or enlargement, it's always worth sort of closer exam on and a palpation to see what's up. And if there is signs of a hernia, better deal with that sooner before entrapment this happened.
Well, we should also talk about the root causes of umbilical infections while we're talking about navel problems. So why do calves get these abscesses in their navel?
Yeah, a good thing to point out is calving season is coming upon us. And I think we want to have producers sort of getting ready to prep their calving area. And so anytime we get infection of the navel, really we've gotten contamination by bacteria, and that bacterial infection is going to cause inflammation there. And so that bacterial contamination comes from, you know, some sort of dirty calving environment, maybe also related to an assisted calving and just having that calf either pulled into a dirty maternity pen or something of that nature, or potentially just that navel may have been broken off a little bit short or be abnormal and be more predisposed to infection. And so really, I think the important aspects is looking at keeping that calving environment clean ahead of time, making sure we're diligent about bedding and ensuring that, you know, we don't get dirty navels. And I'd say work with your veterinarian that, you know, you can consider navel dipping. I don't think I want to get into that debate necessarily. Some people are fairly strongly polarized on how they want to treat those, but there are some considerations that you can have for actually doing navel dipping potentially. And then better yet, just also ensuring that the calves are up, get a good dose of colostrum right away, and that we're paying close attention to that.
Yeah, colostrum is always important. When you start seeing navel abscesses, you sort of think that maybe the colostrum plays a role. I also think sometimes when I see those problems in a herd where there's multiple calves affected, having a creep area for calves to get away from the cows that's cleaner might be a useful thing too sometimes in those situations. Well, that's a great list. I think we've covered the main ones. There's probably a bunch of other less important ones that we could talk about, bladder infections and other things that could cause colic in young calves. But I think we've got the main ones there, Blake. Any final advice for producers who get presented with a calf with these kind of colicky-like symptoms?
Yeah, I think I would just reiterate that it's, you know, it's important for people to have a close exam at home, because as we pointed out, there's multiple causes that could, you know, cause a calf to act colicky, and want to look at those sooner than later, because some of these we can correct potentially with early intervention, whether that be surgical or even some medical treatments at home. And so I think really just to encourage producers to look at these very carefully, and, you know, don't just wait till you're done feeding. Maybe have someone get out there and have a poo fairly quickly. And then if we do see sudden deaths from these types of calves too as well, because some may just sort of present as sort of dying quite rapidly, doing an autopsy or a postmortem, I think, provides us a lot of value of teasing out, you know, what cause was this? Was this something that's a one-off, or maybe is this something that might have other herd implications potentially underlying?
Yeah, that's great advice, Blake. I want to thank you for being here with us. It's great to have you here. I know you're busy and you got a young family there, but I appreciate you taking time and doing this with me. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sean.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to all of you for listening to the podcast, and thanks again to my guest, Dr. Blake Balog. Thank you as well to our sponsors, the Alberta Beef Producers and the Beef Cattle Research Council. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have questions or comments or want to suggest topics that you'd like to see covered in future episodes, please email us at bchnpodcast@gmail.com. Take care till next time.